About a month and a half away from the NFL draft, Pro Day is on the way for Georgia. Combine has happened. I'm Dan Young. That's Brent Rollins. We typically do Film Don't Lie from UGASports.com. Spod Don't Lie, where we just talk about whatever we want to with the draft, with the combine, with these prospects. We just kind of love the positioning of what this means for all these guys, Brent. And we text about this all the time, so we're just having one of these text conversations on the air. I guess let's start with NFL Combine for Georgia guys. Anything that stood out to you? I'm assuming it starts with Mr. McConkey.
It does, I think. But it's also, what's interesting to me is the biggest winner, almost for me, is somebody who didn't do a thing. He just showed up. And that would be Mr. Bowers. Because after the sort of ridiculousness of the photo with him and Gronk, and everybody's like, is he going to measure 6'2", or is he 6'1", and 5'8", or whatnot? Getting in at 6'3", 240-plus pounds, I think for him was, and just being there and meeting people in person, I do think that I saw a ridiculous report that Bowers did not fare well in interviews or something like that. I don't know. That's not – that guy's football through and through. I don't worry about that whatsoever. But outside of Brock showing up and the measurements, I do think Ladd was the biggest winner. Because, and the sad part is that we knew this, right? We knew he was going to – he's a 4.4 flat kid, and it's just a matter of now it's official. And now he's not just, lunch pail guy who works hard and does all those things and any cliche that you want to throw out.
He's not a stereotype. That's what you're telling me.
He is sub 4.4. Legit. So big stuff for him. Great. And now you get to see him in a lot of first round mocks. Just a great all around weekend for him. Really no losers. I didn't think anybody was a sort of quote loser or didn't do something that was that damaged them in some way.
I've texted you my dream for McConkey because a lot of people are trying to wedge him in that number 32 spot there to the Chiefs, which I can see it would be fantastic. He would thrive there. I would love to see somehow he winds up on that Rams roster and you just have these three cats out there with Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp and Ladd McConkey and Stafford just dialing these darts all around the field. Mm-hmm. These dudes just running around, finding themselves open and getting yards after the catch. I think it'd be so much fun for the NFL.
But what's perfect for Ladd actually is that he's not looked at as one of the top 3 to 4 guys. That he is in that 5 to 8 range, because depending upon whatever flavor you like, do you want the route runner or do you want the true vertical threat? Do you want the bigger guy? That kind of thing. But him and A.D. Mitchell, for that matter, them being in that latter half of the first round, well, guess who picks in the latter half of the first round? Teams with better quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And like, if you're a lad and you go to the Rams with Stafford, if you end up at 32 with the Chiefs, if you go whatever 20, something late 20s to Buffalo, you're going to go play with a great quarterback being in the latter part of that first round. And that's a great place for him to be.
I just think he's going to be a really good NFL player if his back allows him to be. If he has some medical stuff with the back, which I think was probably the biggest thing accomplished in Indianapolis for him, was having those discussions with teams, putting them at ease. Maybe you start to get some of the medical things. If Ladd's healthy, I think he's a really, really good NFL player. And again, the stereotype thing, this is not Hunter Renfrow who's going to be an active, solid player in the NFL. This is an elite athlete at the next level.
And I've seen comps with like Tyler Lockett. I've seen comps. Mine is like somewhat Jordan Addison. I mean, they're basically the same profile. I even see Daniel Jeremiah put out Ladd's measurements up with Garrett Wilson, who was, 10th or 11th overall in terms of pick.
And is a great player just with a terrible quarterback situation.
It's been really, really good. Now, the one interesting thing with Ladd, the one negative piece, is hand size. I think it was 8 5/8 maybe, which is smaller than Pickens. And Pickens was 9th percentile hand size. So Ladd's single-digit percentile hand size compared to someone like Rosemary Jackson, 10-inch hands, humongous hands. So that's maybe one thing that, hey, I take this guy versus that guy. But what the other biggest winner was a former Georgia player for me. A.D. Mitchell and the combine that he had, weighing in at 200 plus pounds and running 4.34 with the route running skills that he already has shown, he's a definitive first round pick now.
Well, and the point that you made, this is such a deep wide receiver class, and the position is just valued with greater emphasis than maybe previous years. And I think that's going to continue to grow just as the sport changes and evolves. Same thing that quarterbacks, that you're seeing worse quarterbacks get drafted higher because teams understand the economics of that more. That's going to be happening with receiver as well. This year, I think it's just a really deep receiver class where you can get a starting receiver in the second, third round. But yes, you're also just going to see more receivers taken. So to your point, if Ladd McConkey is the sixth to seventh best receiver in this draft, he could still be a first-round pick.
Yes.
Or that puts him high second round. And either way, that's a really good spot to be in. Teams that win championships tend to do well with late first round and then those second-round picks. You can do more with that just from the economy of the sport.
Yeah, and he's a top 40 player. I think the combine just definitively showed that he is that top 40 player.
Overall, looking ahead to Georgia's pro day, is there anything that you have questions for or about after the combine that you think may be answered at this pro day?
Does Bowers work out at the pro day? I'm curious to see. Does he actually want to, or does he just say, hey, go watch my tape? It's the most insane tight end tape ever, in a way.
It'd be hard to say, even if he doesn't do the drills and run 40s and things. Like, I think he'd want to go run and catch some balls, right?
Oh, I think he would do that, right? Yeah. He would do a workout type thing. But I just, do you put the 40 out there? Do you, do the vert and the broad jumps and those kind of things? That's one. I'm curious to see Rosemy Jackson, Kamari Lassiter, who didn't run the 40 at the combine. I'm assuming they will run the 40 at the pro day. What kind of times do they put up? Because I think Lassiter, his shuttle three cone type times were really good. I think he's kind of put himself in. Especially when teams go back and watch specifically one game against Missouri, where he played a lot in the slot, you show the positional versatility. I know that was a big topic of conversation with him, Javon Bullard, and Tyke, the positional versatility that those guys play with and have. Those things, all positives for the Georgia defenders.
I know you wrote down some questions that we could chat about here, and we're going to probably broaden this out the more of these that we do. We don't only talk about UGA guys. We may do that on this episode too, but just what questions did you come away with from Combine that maybe I can answer for you? I doubt I can, but I can talk about it.
If I set the over under at 9.5, what are you taking?
Of
Georgia players drafted.
All right, let me.
Because to me, there are basically eight guarantees:
Bowers, Mims, McConkey,
Lassiter, Tyke, Bullard, Van Pran. I think is a late. He's a day three guy, but I think he's definitely getting drafted.
I think Milton gets drafted.
Okay, so that's 9.
I think Rosemy gets drafted of all that.
Rosemy would be 9. Rosemy Milton would be up to 9. I think basically the question, if you want to go double digits, do both running backs get taken?
We'd have a Dejan Edwards. We'd have a Zion Logue.
I don't think I don't know that he's getting drafted unless it's seventh round likely. I mean, that's possible. It's very possible, but I don't know that anything about his testing and or tape says draft me.
Am I missing anyone else here that would be?
I mean, there were 11 that went to the combine.
Yeah.
Logue is the 11th. It's, and to me, it's, do you get both? Both Dejan Edwards, Kendall Milton? I definitely think Rosemy Jackson's getting drafted in like the fourth or fifth round, and he's going to be a great pro and have a long career. Potentially,
I think 9's the number. So if you're saying the over under was 9, I wouldn't bet it.
Nah, 9.5, you take the under. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So then that's total amount. We'll go first round picks. Over under 2.5. And that's basically, does Ladd or Lassiter get into the first round?
Yeah, I'll go over. The best case scenario for Georgia is that there are 4 first round picks. I think it could end up being that, especially if Lasseter decides to put a good 40 out there at the pro day.
Yeah.
It's just those are positions of need with cornerback and wide receiver, and those are two really good players. I think Bowers and Mims are slam dunk first-round picks.
Yes.
In a lot of years, I think McConkey would be a slam dunk first-round pick, but because there are so many receivers, there are just some other – like, Adee Mitchell is going to go ahead of Ladd McConkey, and he probably should.
I think what's going to happen, the run on tackles, I think is going to happen. And I know I said this, I think, on the last one when we talked about the Senior Bowl. I still think Ladd doesn't quite get in the first round, that he's 33, 34, 35, one of those first few picks of the second round. And I'll go over on the number drafted. I think they get to 10.
You think Lasseter? Oh, okay, you're going over to 10 there, but first round picks?
But just the two first round picks. I think Ladd ends up mainly because of other things. Now, could the Rams take him? Could the Bills? Yeah, I think he definitely could be. But I just see teams going, all right, I'm getting this. There's a run on tackles happening or a run on corners. I can get the receiver in the next round kind of thing.
All right, let me throw a wild, and you can't bet on this or anything. I think a team falls in love with Ladd McConkey enough to trade up for him if it's late first round. I could see movement there to be like, this is a guy we have to have. He's a good blocker. He showed up for Georgia. He's tough. He fought through injury. He is an athletic superstar. We need a Puka Nacua. Look what just happened with the Rams. And he's even probably a little bit bigger in some cases and probably a little bit better blocker. Don't know if he's quite as dynamic with some open field things because Puka was lights out this year for the Rams.
That's an interesting thought.
You have to have, I think, unless you have Patrick Mahomes, then doesn't matter. You can just throw whatever receivers. But for most quarterbacks, you need to have three or four great receivers out there that can be productive throughout the course of a year. There's more games than ever. They travel more than ever. People get hurt more than ever. And so you need to have a deep roster. McConkey's worth trading up for.
That's, speaking of the economics of that, that's a very intriguing thought.
Not bad for what someone said was going to be an undrafted free agent, right? Wasn't that some national pundit said that?
Yes, that before the championship game last year. Yeah. I forget the quote. I need to go back and look at that quote. That's very true.
What are the questions?
I do think this. So if we think both Amarius Mims and Brock Bowers are first round picks, does Mims go before Bowers? Because obviously, production, they're on completely different stratospheres in a production realm. But positional value comes into play, and you hear that talk constantly among those who are analyzing and looking at the draft. And in essence, you have the Kyle Pitts effect where it's like, oh, we took the tight end high and he was good, but not great. And
look at you dunking on the Falcons. Look at you.
I think the lack of difference making production from Pitts is going to possibly impact Bowers.
Bowers should go ahead of Mims. I don't think he will. I think people are going to look at Mims as the prototypical body that you want in the NFL. I think they'll probably look and say he's pretty raw in the sense that he hasn't had to deal with a lot of snaps. So we're going to get someone about as fresh as you can be coming into this process. So if we trust this guy's going to show up and be a professional, which I think Georgia will give the thumbs up to that, then, yeah, I think he could find himself being back into the top 10.
The Jets at 10, I think, are the highest I've seen Mims in any sort of mock. Nate Tice did one recently. Him and Charles McDonald had him at 10. And I don't think the Jets would take him at 10 because of their experience with Mekhi Becton, who's another just absolute ginormous freak of a human. By the way, the photo of Mims just standing behind all those somewhat normal humans and him looking like a Greek god. I will say Darnell was the most imposing just because of his size. But him and Darnell, I've never stood beside any other human being in my life and been like, that person was just cut, you know, carved out of whatever you want to rock and put on earth to play football.
I don't know that there are. We have the privilege of being beside some of these humans and just getting the perspective of what it's like. I remember 2016 standing beside Julian Rochester and how, like, I think he was a freshman or a sophomore at the time. And I was like, my goodness, this guy is just a massive human being to be like, no wonder he's here doing this thing. And then you see him join the rest of his position group and you're like, oh, he's just another one.
Yes.
That's what Georgia has aggregated here.
Yeah.
Like in any other walk of life, this guy stands out in so many different ways of like, I can't believe I've seen someone just with that size that is still such a great athlete there. And then they get to Georgia and you're like, there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
And that's hard now. Darnell at that position, I don't think there was a lot of them. And Mims, just with that body type, even at tackle, Georgia. Jamari Salyer didn't have that build. Mm-mm. He's had to find other ways to be successful. For all the things that you cannot teach, Mims is worthy of like a top 10 pick. So then the question is, what about the things that you have to teach in terms of being a professional and doing the position and the drills? And can you stay healthy? Can you fight through adversity? All the intangible stuff. That's what the NFL guys get paid money to do. Because for the most part, I would think most people can go look at Mims and say, yeah, that's a pro football player.
And it's also for him, and you heard him talk about it at the combine, I went in the portal, and I was very thankful that I came back to Georgia. And that process for him is a maturity type issue that NFL teams, I think, would very much love when they get an interview setting with him. But yeah, they put the shuttle time out and then it was somehow like, how does that get out? And then it's not real. Like he didn't actually do it. Like that just shocked me, but which would have been one of the most insane shuttle times ever for somebody that size. But still some of the things he was faster in the 40 than by, you know, 0.2 seconds than Van, you know, not quite 0.2, but than Van Pran, who's over 40 pounds lighter. I mean, so he's just a freak of nature athlete. And now what's interesting is where he ends up, because the two places I do see him mocked most often are the Bengals, who historically like taking Georgia players, and the Steelers. And thus he would be reunited with Broderick Jones and Darnell Washington. So that would be a quite interesting trio of Georgia offensive line / tight end prospects that the Steelers have taken over the years.
Do you have other questions? Because we probably have like, what, 5 more minutes, and then we'll re-up this some of these after Pro Day.
Yeah, so the next one kind of is a lead-in from that, what we just talked about. Is the 21 team a bad second quarter away from being looked at as one of the all-time deepest teams in the history of college football?
I mean, I wrote this up yesterday on UGASports.com.
Look, I teed it up there for you.
It teed it up for me. It's one of the best teams of all time now. And you can say, yeah, they had a loss. It happened. And they lost to another really good team. But in terms of what the NFL says about that team, the NFL says that team was freaking loaded. And the defense is going to always be the headline of that team, that defensive front. That they were all drafted in, what, the third or fourth round or higher? Pretty much everyone up in that defensive front.
Yeah.
But you made the point in a tweet earlier in the week that you start looking at the skill players in that team offensively. And that's, for all the hand-wringing we did about Stetson Bennett, maybe we should have looked around and said, look at these cats that are helping Stetson out here.
And I look back at the snaps. I think I just looked at the national championship game. Maybe I should have looked at the SEC championship game too. But in the national championship game, 19 different offensive players got snaps. Well, I'll take that back. 21, if you count the one snap that Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis got on a goal line. But of those 19 offensive players, 17 are going to end up being drafted.
Yeah.
Like that's Erickson and Kyrus, who made the roster and as an undrafted free agent. But that's that offensive team. And like I said earlier, A.D. Mitchell, big-time winner for the – I could see him now being in the early 20s, definitely a first-round pick. Because And what's interesting about his game translates, I think, is better suited for the NFL than it is a college game.
So here's where we stand with that 21 national championship team. There's 8 first-round picks that have already been in the books. Bowers will make 9. Mims will make 10. Yeah, he wasn't a big feature on that team, yes, but he was on it.
Yes.
So let's say McConkey or Lassiter would make, that gets us up to 11. Okay. For 25, I think you'd project Carson Beck to be a first-round pick. He probably would have been a first-round pick this year.
Yes.
Based on what we've seen. So we're getting in 12.
Double digit.
Maybe there's a world where there's a 13 in there if 4 guys get drafted. So let's even just say it's 12 or 13. That 2019 LSU team that is considered, I think, among the best in the history of the sport had 7 first-round picks.
And I think that's the distinction there is because of how insanely awesome Burrow, Jefferson, and Chase were.
And Edwards-Helaire. He's in there.
Yeah, and Edwards-Helaire. They're high-end. But the depth of Georgia's roster that year is unlike any that it's unlike any we'll ever see again because of the current world that exists in college football.
We're going to come to the other side of this somewhere, and I think you might see some of it again. But I don't know that 21 Georgia gets put in the same world as 01 Miami, as 19 LSU. To some extent, 20 Alabama?
Yeah.
When you start looking at the quality of receivers that that team had?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that Georgia gets quite as much love for that 21 roster. And some people would say, well, look at the 22 one. Well, I think you ask anyone that's around the team, 21 team was better, and it kind of had to scratch and claw to get there, whereas the 22 team, by the time you faced TCU, it was all done.
Yeah. Well, they won the one game against Ohio State. And even looking at Ohio State's roster compared to Georgia's roster that year, there's really not much of a comparison in terms of numbers of players they wound up in the league. But the thing, I also think for that discussion, how those players do in the NFL kind of clouds and or impacts what the thought of them as college players are. Yeah. You know, because of Jefferson, Chase, and Burrow being just so other level, otherworldly players in the league.
Yeah, people won't remember that Jordan Jefferson was the third best receiver on that LSU team. He was a good player. He wasn't what he is now.
Yeah, he's evolved.
Like I think you could say Terrence Marshall was more reliable for the LSU team at the time. Yeah, you're disagreeing.
Yeah, I think it was, but Chase was the guy.
Chase was definitely the guy.
He was clearly the guy.
And, well, I mean, it all revolved around Burrow, and then Chase became his big play guy. But I just don't remember Jordan Jefferson being the icon of that team. And he's been that since he's been in the NFL.
But depth of roster, it doesn't get much better than what the 2021 Georgia roster is. And it goes and it speaks to development. And when guys like Ladd and A.D. Mitchell and the Jordan Davises weren't the most highly recruited players.
It's the combination of developing a Devontae Wyatt when other people probably wouldn't have, but then also recruiting a Jalen Carter and him being ready to go so early because he's a freak. So when Jalen Carter's the one rotating in,
next level roster depth. Two other things I think about this year's draft. One, I looked at it, Mims, and I think one of the NFL draft guys actually tweeted something about it recently. Mims played 803 career college snaps. I looked at the last 10 years of every – since PFF has college data, it would be the fewest number of snaps an offensive lineman has played in being drafted in the first round.
It'd be drafted
by a country mile.
Body and practice tape.
The next – there was Garrett Bowles and Ryan Ramczyk to the Saints. They played 1 year of major college football, but they had like junior college years, 2-3 years of junior college or other levels of football. Ramczyk, like, I think he was very small college and then eventually went to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Panay Sewell is like the next guy, and he had like 1,400 snaps, but he only played 2 years. He didn't play his third year because of COVID. So Mims getting drafted in the first round would be almost historic given the few number of snaps that he's played. And the other is the testing stuff to me was big. Two other big things with the testing and for them defensively. Tyke being 5'10", that was kind of shocked that he measured him at 5'10". I thought he was 5'9" at best, and maybe even 5'8" and 7'8" kind of thing. But okay, good for him. Him running 4.46, also good. I thought he might be right at. I mean, that's being sub 4.5 for him was great. Bullard is another one that, because of the positional value, gets a little bit devalued in the draft. He's going to be much, and his comp for me is Antoine Winfield Jr. Same borderline, almost exact same size, speed, explosive metrics, all that. And Winfield was picked early second round and was an first team All Pro and.
Didn't he just get a franchise tag as they try to work on his contract?
Yep. So I think that's what he brings to the league, and he's going to be a very successful player in that, picked in that 40 to 55 range.
We're going to wrap this here because I know a lot of this will come back up after Georgia's pro day next week. So we'll kind of pick it up there. And then I want to talk more about quarterbacks and more broad.
Yeah.
Because we got to figure out who the Atlanta Falcons quarterback is. And it's not going to be Russell Wilson. Because if it is, I get to laugh for months on end.
You'll know more next week because what is it for Monday? The 11th is like the first day of the stuff can be announced, maybe that you can talk to people, but you can't make it official, whatever the weirdness that is the NFL free agency thing is.
I joke about Russell Wilson. There's an interesting dynamic there with the money at play, because Russell Wilson had his contract with the Broncos, horrendous, absolutely horrible franchise killing kind of thing. Russell Wilson for $2 million. You start to talk yourself into it a little bit.
I do. The one big question there I have is all the Kirk Cousins to the Falcons smoke, is it real or is it him using the media to drive the price up for Minnesota? That's going to be the interesting thing for me.
And then there's Justin Fields. And that's where we'll pick it up next time that we have Pod Don't Lie from UGASports.com. For Brent Rollins, I'm Dan Young. Thanks for hanging out with us. We will chat with y'all later on.